The Shaggy Jenkins Show.
We have to make Russia great again.
On the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome to it. Boy, do we have a lot to cover today. It's the week in review, and we'll go everything from Trump's poll numbers to Kellyanne Conway getting into a little bit of trouble. Also, this week saw the death of a legend and, well, maybe the toppling of an empire. We'll talk all about that as we get into this week's stories. Before we do, brief introductions are online. Hi, I'm the host of this show. My name is all over it, Shaggy Jenkins, critical thinker, problem solver, guy just left of normal, insane, and found online, and it's not safe for work sometimes, at Shaggy Live. Joining me is a guy that is safe in any environment because he holds all the information. Please welcome Information Headquarters, Chris Bates.
You have overcome, for I am here. Shaggy, how you doing, my brother?
So far, so good, man. I gotta say, I'm having one of those weeks where I'm feeling like if I check the polls, I'd be all right. What about you?
Continue to check the polls, because the polls may be not in the favor that you may like, but still check them nonetheless.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing about polls and polling, because a lot of people, when we look into them, and this is going to be one of the biggest stories to come leading up to the 2020 election and this week in particular, polling is one of those things that you can treat it like a diamond. You can look through one facet of it and see a glimmer, but then look through another facet of it and see some imperfection. However, Trump this week is enjoying kind of a high because he is, quote, all the media now, Chris, polling higher than he's ever polled before. But there's a twist, isn't there?
Well, yeah. I mean, it also got to consider the source of where the president's coming from. When you compare it, for example, to other polls that he's done or been polled in the past, okay, yeah, he's been, you know, marginally, say, maybe upwards of 60% or sometimes lower, but depends on your view. So when you look at Donald Trump, you got to take it all with a grain of salt, depending on your lens, because he could be cited for being, I don't know, 51%, but that could be kind of low for the average person. But to him, he's winning.
You know, it is. It's like I'm polling higher than I've ever done. We're doing so much winning. It's like, sir, you're at 44%. That's
right.
That's not even half. But it's higher than the 32% I had just 2 months ago. The Chris.
Yeah.
This is the thing about this poll, because Trump, like I said, him and his administration, and especially his campaign organization right now, is very quick to jump on these numbers and be like, yes, this proves that we're doing a good job. We're making America great again. We're rising, winning all the time. I told you this winning would happen. But when you look at other presidents during their midterm who polled at equally low performance numbers, specifically, not just the overall approval, but we're talking in the case by case, and we'll get into those numbers in just a sec. When it comes to other key factors, Trump doesn't look like he's doing well at all. Why the victory lap?
The victory lap obviously comes from the ego, because no matter what you say or what somebody else says, in his mind's eye, he's doing quite well, but in reality, he isn't. And again, that goes back to the same theory about the emperor wears new clothes. If he's of a mindset that, you know, I am who I am, I could be sold something by, look, when I can only imagine what it's like to be a quote-unquote advisor to Trump. Do you let him just sit and do all the talking and nod your head? Or do you have an influence, allegedly someone like a Sean Hannity of Fox News? It boggles the mind. The classic fly on the wall will be interesting. And I think, again, his reality is not the reality as you and I and most people know. If you're, again, this conversation before in your show many times, Shaggy, if you're in a cocoon or a bubble and you watch Fox News Channel and you hate the media and it's fake news and you hate CNN and you hate NBC, you have personal ties to both those networks, and you just latch on to one, then what all do you have? If anybody came to you and said, Mr. President, the numbers are showing you're not doing well, he wouldn't believe you. Why? Because in his mind, it's not about you, it's about him. We're just peons. You know, we're just, you know, in the Pooba League compared to the great Donald Trump.
As they say in Hawaii, we're a squish of that, aren't we? The thing is that there's other polls. And Trump has been largely ignoring those numbers because very loudly they're saying that the American public doesn't exactly trust the guy in the Oval Office. Chris, I want to bring up this poll that basically said out of 67% of people, they believe that the president is unpresidential, with only a 33% little group thinking that he is. Now, once again, not high numbers. And Trump is ignoring these, it almost seems like, on purpose. But here's what I want to ask you. When it comes to his overall approval numbers, they're at 44%. Yet even people that approve him in another poll basically said he's unpresidential. How can you be both good and bad like he is to some voters, Chris?
Because I think people who voted for him don't want to admit they made a mistake. And some people are like that with their own egos. We always have the old adage, you know, where I come from, they'd rather go to hell with gasoline drawers on before they admit they made a mistake. And that could be the same way for some of these people who voted for Trump. Now, again, if you represent anybody but Obama, now Obama completed, you know, his two terms, or anybody that had Obama's legacy or would continue on, say at the time, say a possible Hillary Rodham Clinton and people like that, anybody but them. So if people who had the anti-vote, they probably necessarily didn't care for Trump, but it was an anti-anything post-Obama vote that they wanted to get into. So you have those voters. So now you see how this president has comported himself, how very mean-spirited, how petty he is. Like, oh, wait a minute, I didn't know he'd be like that. So instead of saying you made a mistake, okay, yeah, in the polls of the Washington Post, ABC poll, yeah, he did okay, but on the other side, he's not presidential. So it's kind of like saying two things at the same time.
You know, this is the thing that really gets me about this, because Trump, when it comes to his approval rating, they come from this echo chamber that you just mentioned with Fox News. His base stays tuned into them pretty constantly, and anything other than that, they tend to ignore. However, because Trump's intimacy with Fox News, he's been able to keep his base as almost kind of a captive audience. But this week saw him start to erode away his one channel of access to his base when he attacked Fox News. Care to explain why Trump would, even though he's polling kind of good, everything else says that he is in legitimate trouble. Chris, why would you now go after the very people that delivered you the presidency?
Because you feel, if you're Trump, that they're going anti you. Let me read this quote that he had one of his tweets. It says, he's watching Fox News weekend anchors is worse than watching low ratings, fake news, CNN, NBC chief news presenter, Lion Brian Williams. Now, Brian Williams now, of course, on MSNBC, I had no idea he had a nickname. It's like some wrestler nickname. But we all know that the president deals with sophomore behavior, name-calling, crooked Hillary, and the whole like. So that's his unfortunate type of rhetoric. But it's the classic bite the hand that feeds you. I think Fox News at times wants to present itself not being fair and balanced. Remember that was the slogan years ago, and balanced, and it wasn't at all. I think at times, compared to other mediums, other source information, that they feel, okay, maybe we can't always go pro-Trump. If the polls, for example, are showing him versus, say, Joe Biden, and Joe Biden's leading, we got to report it. Now, everybody can spin it. Sean Hannity, I mean, go on and on. But I think any time when Fox News in particular goes after him, that hurts more because everybody else is fake news, CNN, NBC, and the like. But it's like if your own father or mother chastised you and called you out your name, and everybody in the street called you out your name, it hurts more with somebody who has embraced you, who has put you close to the Fox News Channel bosom, and all of a sudden you can't take it anymore, that hurts him. That hurts his pride.
Hmm. Yeah, because the thing about this whole hurtful thing with Fox is they're so intricately married to the Trump brand by this point that whenever his polls take a dip, so too do their ratings. And I mean, we could go off and talk about how they had the worst week ever with Sean Hannity being complicit in helping spread Russian propaganda, the network knowing about it, not making anybody aware, getting dissed by their boy in charge, Donald Trump, and a low-key network called One American News getting the thumbs up from him, and they are at bargain basement production value. But the thing is that Fox, even though it has had possibly the worst week ever, people are still going to be drawn to it, and there's still going to be a captive audience. And if Trump loses that audience, I hate to tell him, but the ratings for One American Network aren't that great, and they're not really going to help bolster him at the polls. So at the end of the day, with Trump jumping on the whole row attack front with Fox, Chris, who are his friends?
I think whoever the friend is of that day, because they do it 180 the very next day. For example, Fox News and Friends, Fox and Friends, they come in the morning. It's a morning show. He likes to go on there and call in and things of that nature. He's very grateful for them. But let's go back to Helsinki. When even Fox News, see, this is what I knew, that even Fox News has somewhat of a heart. So when the whole Helsinki thing happened, we all seen it. We saw the reports with the president across from Vladimir Putin, and he's not attacking Putin like he attacked people, you know, say at other global get-togethers and global meetings. He gives them a free pass, and he is sworn enemy of our country, Vladimir Putin and the Russians. Nothing like that, just, again, going against his own intel. The president, the side with the enemy. Even Fox News had to call him on the carpet with that. So I don't think he forgets that. I think he probably files it, and then goes and attacks later on. He did attack them because he figured he'll get a free pass. They didn't give him a free pass on that. So anytime the president is attacked by his own, again, I reiterate, it hurts more. It cuts deep to the quick because we only have our own enemies out here he's already has constructed. The president needs support. You need to feed his ego. Why? Because that's what he wants you to do. But anytime anything is against that, case in point, so the U.S. Soccer, you know, women's team were very victorious, you know, in their time. So there was chanting of people saying F Donald Trump in the background. And you know this, Shaggy, from your broadcast, and so do I. A lot of people are familiar with it. Television might really have like a 7 or 10 second delay so they can dump the button if they hear anything profane. In that moment, they just let it ride. So he felt, oh my God, the station, the network that embraced me, let them say, F me, and I made you guys? Again, the ego is, you know, completely run amok.
You know, this is the thing, too, is because when we talk about how Fox News and Trump have been behaving towards each other lately, yes, we have the very much pool boy extraordinaire Sean Hannity out there going, everything's okay, boss, just scraping the muck off the top. Clear waters underneath, yay. But on the other side of that, you have Shep. Shep, the current thorn in the side of everybody that just wants to make Fox News Trump news all the time. I got to bring up this, because when it comes to Shep, he did something that Fox News never has done in the past. During the president's presentation on the environment, where he was signing or deregulating a bunch of stuff on the environment, Shep from Fox preempted or cut into his speech to fact check him in bullet point and in voiceover. And that's something that Fox News hasn't done before. I mean, I get it. He's the one credible reporter they got. But at the same time, that's almost vitriol. That's almost malice, isn't it?
It is. That's a very ballsy move that they did. The network let him do that. Because usually, as you know, you wait till the whole commentary or the whole speech is over with, then you have bullet points commentary afterwards, the rebuttal afterwards. not in the middle or during. That's really unprecedented. And the fact that, again, the network that is the, what can I say, is the network of Trump to let somebody who checks, in fact, checks the president to do it during a speech is unheard of.
Yeah, and that's just it. Most of the time, other networks gleefully jump on this, with Fox just basically doing cutaways whenever the president isn't talking to reinforce the things that he said and to give him a rah-rah, sis, boom, bob, kind of the cheerleading. This was character... this was not in character. I was going to say a character in absenteeism, because they just basically vamooshed and became somebody else. It was weird seeing Fox News hold Trump up to the task, but how long do you think they're going to get away with this in the era where their ratings are linked to his poll?
It's a flash in the pan. It comes like probably from my observation, like every 3 to 4 months, you know, just kick it up a notch, you know, every now and again, just to, I don't know. I mean, I don't know their theory in doing this, because to me, people who are for the president, who, like I said before, a sis, boom, bah type of thing, they will go through the fire with him regardless of what he says or does. They go through it blindly. And this whole thing, like I said before, Shepard Smith is Shepard Smith. Everybody knows Shepard. He's going to check the president. He's going to ask questions. He's going to be the opposite side. So I guess in the theory, again, of Fox News Channel, you got one lone person that's going to not be of the ilk of everybody else that's completely conservative, completely right-wing. You have somebody else who's probably somewhere middle to left in Shepard Smith, who is going to be opposing voice. And you got one. Everybody else is, you know, like you got 1%. Everybody's 99% conservative leaning towards the presidency. But again, even when you allow him, meaning Shep, to interfere or quote unquote interject during that time, I don't know what really their plan is. Because again, most conservative think tanks or most conservative broadcast outlets will go through the fire, once again, through the muck and mire with this president, no matter what or he does or says.
Yeah, and that's just kind of it, because when you talk about going through the muck and fire, that's the other thing. See, Fox News isn't just kind of married to him in a rating sense, and they're having these little spats for attention. I don't know. Fire a ring, she'll stop complaining. Ha, 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 conservatism. Sorry.
That's all right.
Every so often, I have a moment. But
it's okay.
When it comes to this whole marriage between Fox and Trump, on one side, you have this very public split that seems to be happening currently. But on the other hand, we have evidence that Sean Hannity helped perpetuate fake stories about Seth Rich so that it would demean and devalue a Hillary Clinton in the polls. Now, he did this, and he was complicit with Russian operations that we know were in effect during the 2016. So on one hand, you've got the network saying, hey, 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 now we're a news entity. On the other hand, they're like, you know, we'll lie to get you in office. All you got to do is give us the right information to spin. And that's what happened with the Seth Rich story and Sean Hannity. So, Chris, this is the kind of thing that I just kind of want to wrap this up in an eggshell. How is this going to end?
I think it's going to end. I think we're going to see every bits and pieces every now and again of this type of rhetoric, which, again, I'm completely lost in the dark about why they're doing it. I don't think it's going to be no end. I really believe that every now and again it will pop up, like I said before, give it a 3 to 4 month timetable, and it will pop up and get these type of things from Fox News. I don't know what the end game is. I'm completely baffled. I really am.
Yeah, because, I mean, if Trump tries to stand tough against Fox, where's his base going to see him at? But, okay.
Exactly.
This is the question that you got to ask, though. Was this the most interesting spat this week in D.C.?
I would say, yeah.
I would say it runs a very close second.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, to a Democratic House member and Kellyanne Conway. Have we heard about the heavyweight boxing match that is Presley v. Conway?
You know what? If you don't know, you should know. If you don't know, now you know.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go ahead and start this story off by saying Kellyanne Conway is still around. We don't have an explanation.
No, we don't know.
But while she's around, she decided to, you know, speak, which is always not work in her favor. Then her latest thing is... She tried to go up against Ayanna Pressley out of Massachusetts. Now, Kellyanne Conway basically said some stuff about, you know, meh, you're just a distraction. You're just, you know, you're just running your mouth. Pressley comes back with what I would like to say is the equivalent of Beyonce snatching her weave off in a public street and said, and I quote, "Keep my name out your lying mouth." Chris, what the hell is going on with Kellyanne Conway thinking that she's going to start a fight publicly with a House member?
Kellyanne Conway reminds me of a scene. I'm going way back for some of you old school people. If you're a fan of the late, great Bruce Lee. His tour de force of what we call Enter the Dragon. There's a scene where he's on Han's Island. He's about to fight in Han's tournament. He goes against this guy who kills his sister. Not a spoiler alert, but he kills his sister. So he's about to fight him. And the guy takes the board and he hits it in front of Lee. And Lee responds, "Boards don't hit back." So when Kellyanne Conway is on these talking head shows, there's nobody to really say anything back to her. Depending on the host or commentator sitting across from her or on, you know, the screen, every now and then you may see somebody that challenges her, but not from the standpoint of somebody who's in the same realm of politics as Representative Pressley is from Massachusetts. So again, when you say things like, "Keep my name out of your lying mouth," that means we come from, you know, from the street. One more again. Mm-hmm. You got one more time to put my name in your mouth, and it's over with. It's lights out. Lights out, everybody.
You know, and that was just it. I was listening to this whole exchange, and I could just hear the smack talking. "If my name crossed your lips, the next thing you'll taste is my fist." You know, I was airing that.
That's right. Yes.
But this is the thing. With Trump's administration, they've always been very, very adept at using bullying tactics, of getting on and doing the tough talk. And for the most part, we've been trying to Michelle Obama this thing, and when they go low, we go high. But this new freshman group of House representatives, these new younger Democrats, seem to be coming out the corner with the trunks and gloves on, don't they?
Well, to me, it's refreshing. It's kind of a catch-22 because I understand what the First Lady and Michelle Obama means by that, about the whole aim of, you know, they go low, we go high. But in all respect to the First Lady, not everybody subscribes to that. It's not a slant to what she said. It's very inspiring. But with other people, you got to speak their language. If I'm speaking English and the person speaking Mandarin and we can't communicate, I got to speak Mandarin to get your ear, to get your mind opened up. So I got to learn Mandarin. I got to speak the language you're accustomed to. So in this situation, with, you know, Kellyanne Conway, all like those little digs and, you know, those little harsh criticisms, because, well, look who her boss is. And so not too far from where the political tree falls from, Kellyanne Conway was in the president. So every time she's on television or tweets, and these little, you know, these things to say to discourage people, to name call and things like that. But here comes Representative Pressley. "Hey, I ain't having it. You talk about me, I talk about you. And again, if you even mention me sideways, it's going to be one." And so I like that because I for years, the Democratic Party only came off kind of weak to me. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, the Republicans, you know, my way or the highway. Oh, okay, well, here comes the olive branch. No. You know, and I'm not pouring violence, mind. I'm not promoting that. A verbal back and forth let you know that I ain't no punk.
Right? I ain't trying to go down like that. And let me read you the big, long quote, because she called Kellyanne Conway Distraction Becky. Not even Becky with the good hair, just Distraction Becky. She goes,
right.
quote, oh, hi, distraction Becky. Remember that time your boss tore babies from their mother's arm and threw them in cages? Yeah, take a seat and keep my name out your lying mouth. I'm sorry, but from where I am from, sir, that does sound like a challenge to the honor of my character. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, but this, I mean, oh, God, we've only got like 60 seconds left here. But look, I'm just going to throw this out here. Is the era of Republicans bullying Democrats starting to end?
Yes. With a new freshman of congressmen or congresspeople coming in through, it's a new day.
Oh, man. I'm hoping. The next thing I hope to see is AOC out in the street pulling her hair in a ponytail going, come on, you want to talk it? You know, with the accent and everything that only comes out when a Latin woman's mad.
That's next.
I want to see the AOC SmackDown, man.
That's right.
One AOC. Yeah, I don't condone violence. I'm just saying. It's good to see the Democrats growing a little bit of a spine. Now, we've got to take a break. When we get back, we'll talk about how Mitch McConnell thinks him and Obama are just like peas in a pod. You're not going to like where this one's going. Plus, we'll talk about a famous third partier and more when we get back. This is the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
Is the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back to us. Hi, I'm Shaggy, and we've already had an exciting first part of the show that you've missed out on, and shame on you for doing that. You should go over to my website, shaggyjenkins.com, and get the show. Subscribe there or through Spotify, iHeart, or wherever fine media is served. Joining me from a location where fine media is served. I'm still iffy on the pizza. Information headquarters, Chris Bass.
Oh, man. Thank you. Always an honor to be here. It's funny to me. We talked about pizza earlier before I got on the air with a friend of mine, man. Look, we got the pizzas on lock. We got it on lockdown. So whatever your choice is, a thin, a folded, or like, you know, thick, deep dish, you know, you serve as a meal. Don't worry. You will be full.
Yeah. In Chicago, you can find your slice. So, I got a question for you. Have you ever taken one of those ancestry DNA tests?
No, I haven't. No, I know a lot of people who have, but me personally, I am not.
Oh, yeah, I have. It changed my credit score. Here's the thing. When we talk about people's ancestry, one thing that's always very fascinating is when you look into modern people and the way they behave, and you kind of go back in time and see if there's any link. Well, for the longest time in the Senate, Mitch McConnell has been running that place like a plantation. And surprise, 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 it turns out that in his ancestry, he's got some slaves, a lot of them, more than a dozen of them in his family as property, as they say in Kentucky. Now, Chris, it's bad enough being caught with some slavery closets, slavery skeletons in your closet, as McConnell was, but was his defense any better?
No.
That's a good,
hell no.
That's a good way of saying it, because I, without words, because I was, you know, sometimes I watch the news on my phone and I have captions on. When Mitch McConnell made his statement as to why it's okay that his ancestors owned slaves, Cory Booker did not need work. When they cut the camera to his face said enough. I think it said something along the lines of, this cracker can't be serious. But, Chris, what is it that he said is his defense?
I want to read it so I want people to understand where we're coming from with this. Mitch McConnell on Tuesday compared himself to former President Barack Obama by noting they both oppose reparations and both he, the nation's first African-American president, are descendants of slaveholders.
Whoa. Holder?
Slaveholders.
What is that? Is that like a shelf where you keep them until the owners come back for them? I'm very unfamiliar. I am versed in history, and I have never heard holder. Explain.
No, I first of all, before I explain, as you know, Shag and I go back and forth with stories to each other, and then we get them in order before we do our broadcast. When I send you the story, what was my reaction that I typed to you about McConnell?
Let me see if this is the safe one. McConnell's an idiot.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mine was the explicit response.
Right. So let's continue to quote from the Senate Majority Leader. He said, you know, once again, I find myself in the same position as President Obama. We both oppose reparations and both are descendants of slaveholders. As McConnell said, and he was asked by a report from NBC, that his relatives were slaveholders, changed his view about reparations. McConnell did not say if he knew about his family's ownership of slaves before the report was published Monday. Let me say the following.
Okay.
Slaveholders, like I said, like you, you know, I've done history like most people talk, you know, that taken history over the years with various classes. Slaveholders, slave masters, I was familiar with in a lot of my courses I've taken over the years. Slaveholders, that's kind of new to me. And you cannot compare the two because, again, Mitch McConnell, I believe, always finds a way to start crap, to say it very mildly. He'll find a way to say things. I don't think maybe he believes half the stuff he's talking about just to be on the opposite side or to find some way to stir the pot to keep both sides of the aisle divided. Some people are there to divide and sometimes conquer. I think he's always there to make sure that we never find one accord on both sides of the aisle. When you say things like that, this keeps the division completely divided all the way.
So if you're talking about division, that seems to be something that he's into. But I want to kind of ask about, not multiplication, but addition. Chris, the question seems to be to me that every time Mitch McConnell needs an enemy, he brings up Obama's name. Every time he needs somebody to be better than, he brings up Obama's name. You know, oh, I do this better than Obama. I did this better than Obama. Now, flip the script a little bit, but every time he needs to, you know, make up for some obviously stupid, racist, backwards stuff, he buddies up and says, oh, hey, me and Obama were just the same. We even owned slaves together. This is the thing I got to ask you. Is he using Barack Obama as his token black friend here?
Yes, but again, as you just, you know, eloquently talked about, the signals are mixed. How you go from in one breath to say that you're better than Obama, you're better than the former president and things of that nature, you turn around and say, well, you know, we have this in common. So, you again, lost in translation. To me, if you're going to be the enemy or someone who's against the president, in this situation, President Barack Obama, then stay in that lane. You know, don't try to, even in jest or even trying to be sarcastic or I don't see him having a wit. Maybe he thinks he does, but don't do that. Go back to what you do best, hating people who are not like you.
Yeah, because this week we had a little op-ed piece from one of the senators currently serving under Mitch McConnell, who has basically described him as a professional obstructionist, somebody that has abandoned the mission of the Senate, and even has been quoted as telling people that these days they're more into the personnel services of appointing people than they are actually hearing legislation. Now, he has a very aggressive agenda. And for the longest time, nobody has come along and ever been able to kind of give him the elbow. But Mitch McConnell this week also had kind of a surprise in the form of one Amy McGrath. Amy McGrath, former Marine, is now running against Mitch McConnell in Kentucky. And you and I, we were talking about, Representative Presley earlier.
Mm-hmm.
McGrath did the same thing. She's coming out of the corner, trunks and gloves up, ready to swing. Chris, how excited are people behind her, though?
Well, we haven't seen anything like this since 2014, when Kentucky's Secretary of State, Allison Undergan Grimes, ran. So it's been a little bit. It's been a few years. And I think, again, people within the camp of McConnell, of course, you don't want to name any names because it won't be outed, but even people close to his circle saying, the man's out of touch. You know, and not saying that he doesn't need to step down, that's too much like right, but they are saying he's out of touch, and anybody out of touch doesn't really have the grasp of, again, what's going on currently in our world in 2019. So here comes McGrath. Amy McGrath is an excellent candidate. It's about people talking about, having pride for your country. Retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel and combat pilot. So when you talk about all the attributes of what makes America great, depending on what your definition is, someone who served, in this country, who would obviously die for this country, that's what makes America great. That's one definition. People who are dying for your ability to have rights in this country. Nothing wrong with that. And so someone like her, who even said that she was a 13-year-old girl who wrote to McConnell back in the day and never got anything back. It's a stretch. I get it. But she's out the, like you said, out the gate swinging because, look, you got a beast. You were 13 years old with this man. And the history that he has been out of touch with someone or people who tried to get him to come back to the reins or come back to certain things. Again, going back to similar with the president, not an easy task to do. Again, being your purview of your universe. I think Amy McGrath would definitely give him a run for his money for running against him for his position.
Yeah, this is the thing that really got me about when she came out. And this is something else. We just got to go ahead and add a little footnote here. Mitch McConnell does have war service in his past. It's just he can't claim it because it was the Civil War. But moving on, when it comes to Amy McGrath, though, Chris, her war experience kind of is something that a candidate on the Democratic side hasn't had. And I mean, I know that I'm saying that from a state where we have Tulsi Gabbard. But when it comes to the East Coast, Amy McGrath is not just a breath of fresh air. She is the mold has been broken. We've never seen this before. Am I right?
You're absolutely correct. I mean, no offense to Democrats, and not saying they never served, but the majority of people I've seen over the years that served has been mostly on the GOP side. So now here comes someone who has that type of track record, who has similar credentials of being a Marine Lieutenant Colonel, combat pilot, and fighting for her country and being part of it, that perspective on the Democratic side. It goes back to the early conversation, Shaggy, about this new breed of progressive Democrats. I put her in that same category.
Yeah, she seems to be one of those ones that's like, look, I believe in the American military. I believe in taking care of the veterans because guess what? Aha, I am one. But at the same time, this vast increase in America's militarism is not something that I endorse. The thing that really gets me about her coming out when it comes to Mitch McConnell is Mitch McConnell is, at best, awkward AF. When it comes to him talking about women, he is never, shall we say, graced with the proper words. This does seem to be the biggest kryptonite that you can have to a guy like a senator from Kentucky. You have Army service, You have deep family roots. You have longstanding political activism. And then on top of all of that, you have somebody that is a gender that you typically cannot go forth in front of public people and say anything but asinine stuff that makes you look bad. I mean, did we find the cracker kryptonite here with her?
It's a possibility. We've been reading quotes throughout the show. Let me read this one from Amy McGrath. She claims everything that's wrong in Washington started with McConnell, who was elected a lifetime ago, who has bit by bit, year by year, turned Washington into something we all despise. Unquote. That's, again, knuckle up and guard your grill, verbally, because that's swinging.
Yeah.
And it's swinging in the right direction. She's not lying.
No, a lot of times the Democrats always try to vilify Mitch McConnell, which when you look at him, vilifying him does nothing. He enjoys that. He takes villainy for breakfast. It's a supplement to him at his age. But when it comes to things that he cannot positively react about, it is really point by point what is your record, McConnell. And his record is one of an obstructionist, isn't it?
Of course. I think people have to play to their strengths. Depending on what business you're line of in or whatever you select in your selective professionalism, you develop a play of strengths. And the thing about, I have to give some credit to McConnell in this strength, he knows how to drop the bomb and leave.
Yeah,
that's what he does effectively. He drops the bomb, and everybody is reacting to what the bomb just did. By that time, he's out the door.
Yeah, you know, my grandparents used to do the same thing, and boy, it stunk up a room when they did it. And he has left a lot of people in the dust, too, when it comes to political aspiration. Let's keep in mind, Mitch McConnell sees himself as a position of a stopgate, not an arbitrator. And that's one of the biggest things that McGrath attacked him on. It's time to stop stopping and to start going. And that message might resonate with Republicans, don't you think?
Well, absolutely. Again, you know, we hear about the infighting with the GOP and the Trumpsters and things like that. And regardless of what you hear, I think that's the truth to it. That goes with either side of the aisle. But we're just talking about this, for example, because of the grand old party that a senator of Mitch McConnell belongs to, majority leader. The thing about this is that we could see the end of an era in McConnell. It's nothing to be laughed about. I mean, 2020 could be completely it for him. And once again, going by the rhetoric on both sides of the aisle, we already know the Democrats really care for him. But if you have people within the party saying and rumbling, he has to go, that right there is the kryptonite you talked about earlier in the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And let's just go ahead and say, there has been a little bit of excitement in the fact that after she announced in her first 24 hours, she raised over close to $2.5 million. Would you be worried right now if you were McConnell?
Yeah, because that's the reason why you had a rebuttal after what she said. Of course you're worried. Now, if she was somebody that was a non-threat but will ignore her, keep it moving, then why did you respond so quickly? Because you know she could possibly upset your seat and take over.
That's just it. The taking over part could be happening. Now, how fundamentally, though, because we've been stuck with McConnell for years, how fundamentally would this shift D.C.?
I think, again, you will see a new era. Because that power shift going to the Democrats is exactly what they need.
Yeah, I agree. Now, let's talk about, our last story. And we've got about 8 or 9 minutes on this. And we'll probably need every single second of it. Chris, this week, a legend died. And I don't mean the legend of, like, a sports hero, like a Rapinoe or you know, like a iconic singer or anything like that. Talking about a guy with some big old ears and some crazy ideas between them, who, for one brief second, upset the American political system so much that we still talk about it to this day, because nobody's ever repeated what that guy has done since. This week, we mark the passing of one Ross Perot. Chris, what are your thoughts on this guy?
Well, I remember him when I was covering him back at ABC WLS Radio here in Chicago as a breath of fresh air. I'll tell you why. So this man was running for the presidency back in 1992. You had incumbent Herbert Walker Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, and you had incoming Democratic side Bill Clinton. And here comes again, like you said before, this small, miniature-sized man, big ears, funny accent, Ross Perot. Ross Perot was refreshing because he put both sides on notice. I remember one debate the three of them had. He said to both sides, you got to have accountability. And he was right. He said both of these guys won't mention they had made a mistake over time because they're a part of an alignment of a party. When it comes down to me, I have a business sense. I have a business acumen. Here's how it should run. It should be ran like a business, the American public. And I used to love his flow charts, too. I mean, he was entertaining, but he did make you think. Now, obviously, as far as me covering it, what I saw was the fact that he obviously got in the way of President Bush. If anybody was a spoiler alert back then, it was Ross Perot for Bush Sr., as far as I'm concerned. I thought it was a breath of fresh air. I really liked the guy.
You know, it is odd, though, that when we talk about candidates and presidents in the United States, and, you know, everybody, when we talk now, they're like, oh, third-party candidate, well, we've got the Green Party, we've got the Libertarian Party, we got this, we got that. And it's like, no, you don't understand. They've never reached the level that Perot has done, where he basically forced two national networks to make him a part of the debate.
Yes.
That is unheard of. To this day, nobody has ever repeated. Now, was that more money or was that Ross Perot's charisma?
That was money. That money talks first. Remember the time he actually bought like a half hour on ABC? He bought a half hour to go over his bullet points about how he could save America.
Yep.
Out of his own pocket.
Yep.
You know, so if anybody had the cachet that a Ross Perot had, then they can do the exact same thing. You write the check out, as long as it doesn't bounce, you're good. I thought it was an interesting footnote. There's a documentary that Bush Sr. did called 41, obviously about his road to the presidency. They interviewed him, and during the interview, the offside reporter or commentator asked him, how you feel about Ross Perot? I don't like the man. I never really cared for Ross Perot. It was so subtle, but so quick, like, don't you ever mention that man's name in our presence again, or I'm going to dropkick you. That's how Bush Sr. gave him his look. Because apparently, and I'm just paraphrasing, because as far as Bush was concerned, Sr. was concerned, that man, I mean, Ross Perot, cost him his election.
You know, you can't argue with that logic, because when Ross Perot came along, he was just right of George H.W. Bush socially. But when it came to the finances, and especially when he bought those 30 minutes because NBC wouldn't put him in the debate, that's how he countered them. When he bought that time, American people started to see these flowcharts and stuff and go, and this is kind of weird, because this is the point that we are once again in our presidential election. They looked at the two candidates and they said, oh my God, neither one of you really has a coherent plan. But here's a guy that has got so hardcore of a plan. Now, of course, later studies would tell you that plan was completely ineffective, and it would have caused some craziness had Ross Perot actually won. It would have been a destabilizing thing on it. But fact of the matter is every time he went up with those graphs and stuff, people saw a plan. And it seems like over and over again, now in modern politics, Chris, we're looking for the person with the plan, aren't we?
That's where Elizabeth Warren comes in. Elizabeth Warren is way more effective than Ross Perot. She has these plans about having to save this country, especially with, for example, coming to college tuition, for example. And not taking anything away from the other candidates on the Democratic side, but she has a set goal and plan, and it's precise. You can fact check it if you like. It does make sense. So if anybody out of the candidates right now was not just what you want to hear or ear hustling, with her, you're going to get facts, and she can back it up. You can question if you like, nothing wrong with that. But her plan and plans are concise, way far ahead of Ross Perot. And kind of Ross Perot kind of paved the way for a better version of the outsider with the plan.
Now, this is the thing that a lot of people don't appreciate, and it's just one of those crazy little footnotes about Ross Perot. Ross Perot, the reason that he had all these flowcharts, graphs, and things like that is because his actual claim to fame is, and I'm not making this up, data analysis and computing systems. He actually made a company before he made another company, but he made a company that was so good at its data processing that it was bought out whole farm by Dell and used to launch a computer empire from them. Ross Perot was a data guy. So we always give him the stigma of being the simple guy with the big ears with a funny accent. But behind all of that, there was some actual smarts. And it's kind of, I know, in this modern era, it's kind of nostalgic and refreshing to think about somebody with brains, isn't it?
Well, yeah. But nowadays, as you know, we've seen it over time, where the geek, you know, finally is able to have him or her mark because, you know, they make the world go around through technology, electronics. And at the time of his passing, when Ross Perot passed away at 89 years old, it was estimated he was worth $4 billion.
Yeah. Then that was from selling his data and analysis systems. He is, and this is the thing, because like I said, as far as public policies and social policies, not a fan of where Mr. Ross Perot would have taken us. But as an enigma, as a legend, should he be up there with some of the American greats?
I would say so. Again, you know, you want to create a Mount Rushmore of greats in politics. I mean, everybody is subject to debate. But for me, you got to put Ross Perot. Here's the guy, of course, came from business, obviously, IBM. You know, went and created his own company, as you know, years before then. That was the antithesis for Dell. So again, the man dealt in data. So when he had the plan, it seemed like a guy that had it all together because of his formal background. But you cannot ignore him because of what would have happened had he not got involved in the 92 election.
Yep.
You can't picture it because he was there.
It would have changed everything, and that's where we have to end. Until next time.